They said that Griffith is being held in the oldest level of the lowest dungeon beneath my ass.
Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 59. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer Otaku who talk about all things anime, manga, and other related topics. The Kenzoku are...
Hey y'all, I'm Mike.
Hi, I'm Dylan.
Hey, I'm Sam.
And I am tonight's host, Nick. We are filming this episode on October 10th, 2024, and the topic is the Berserk Golden Age Memorial Edition, is I believe what the formal title is. I could be wrong, but something to that effect. It is basically the TV edited, or I guess TV length edited, not original, but Berserk Golden Age movie trilogy, which was released in 2012. The TV, I guess remaster, we can call it, aired, I believe, in 2022?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? From summer until December. Maybe a fall through December. I think it was like something like that. I didn't do all of my super... here we go. October 2nd till December 25th. Oh, wow. So literally the final episode aired on Christmas Day. that's morbid. Oh, yeah, I didn't pick up on that. Jeez. But yeah, so we're actually sitting just about on the two-year anniversary of the airing of this. So yeah, so with that, Hashing. So yeah, obviously I just went over the, you know, brief history of this. So for those unaware, the Golden Age arc is more or less what also Berserk 97, the 25 episode TV series, covers more or less. Would you guys generally agree with that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yep.
I think so.
Interestingly enough, they opted to retry it again with the movie trilogy, this time using Studio 4°C, which is famously known for doing more, I would say, art housey and not so much like mainstream stuff. But so that was kind of a pleasant surprise at the time. Sam, you're a resident 4C, I would say, expert. Would you agree with that? They generally kind of steer away from the mainstream and more do kind of their own thing.
Yeah, I would think so. I'm not sure I would classify myself as an expert, but I've definitely been a fan for a long time, and I think historically.
I would say you're probably the longest standing, 4C. I would say,
yeah, they don't do a lot of anime. We'll just say that. Like, I don't think they do a lot of anime. They definitely do like production assistant stuff for people, but like their own stuff doesn't seem like they do a lot.
And yeah, they've been experimenting with 3D CG and doing that for a long time. Yeah. Didn't they do the Macross 7 opening at least?
I'm not sure.
Oh boy, somebody got the
fact check. They definitely, I will say that they were a kind of a 3D CG pioneer. The way I got to love them was their music video for Kenichi's Extra, which was like the only way anybody ever got into Kenichi, because that music video was awesome. But that was also blending of 2D and 3D, and it was really a really good blending, I think.
Mm-hmm. I forgot that was them that did that. But yeah, they did that and then some other stuff. And then, obviously, I think in this, we'll say spoilers.
Aplenty.
Spoilers galore. Maybe not so much for plot stuff, but just spoilers beware of a thing that was originally animated in 97 and then has been out for 10 years and redone that started in manga in 89. So,
yeah. And for those that are really sensitive to that, Berserk is quite excellent. Assuming you're open to, it's very much more seinen, so very dark, very ruthless, I think is a good way to describe it.
Yes.
Last thing about production that I'll mention is, at least according to what I'm seeing on the Wikipedia, is that music was kind of done by, well, so the original Berserk soundtrack was famously scored by Susumu Hirasawa. And they retained a few of the pieces, specifically like Forces, obviously shows up in the very, very beginning. But aside from that, it looks like the other composer was actually Shiro Usagi.
Yeah, which is wild.
Usagi did all this.
which is like, wow, that's I mean, you know, can't complain about the pedigree. Like, I'm not going to complain of Shiro Sagisu doing music on anything, even if it is even if I'm expecting Susumu.
I will say it didn't stand out to me.
Yeah, not as impactful, I would say. But, you know, there's such a strong association with Susumu and Berserk, right? Like, you can't have one without the other. Just like Sagisu with Eva. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hand in hand, right? So it wasn't that. I would say the music was great, but I would say it wasn't as impactful as the original 97s. And I don't think anything could be replace it, honestly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, maybe we can just open up the floor, because I think Berserk is as a topic is something that many of us have a lot of experience and different experiences and opinions with. So open up with you, Dylan.
Okay, so for Susumu stuff, he did the song Aria, which is the opening, but Forces was only, I think that was, there was a remix of that that was added into Memorial Edition, and that wasn't in the original film versions. Mm.
Yeah, if in the original film versions, there's actually only a very, very brief, I would say maybe 5 second kind of echoing chant of Forces.
Okay.
Kind of the like one scene in, I believe, the first movie of the trilogy. Yeah. My memory might be a little bit
pretty foggy, sure that's in the TV show.
That was the
too.
Only reference to it. Maybe. I don't recall exactly when it was.
So I'll start off with the things that I like about this in the beginning. I like the music. I think it's good. I think the soundtrack is good. But it's kind of interesting that it's like 3 hours of soundtrack versus Berserk 97 TV, where the soundtrack is like 35 minutes for a 25 episode series.
Hmm.
And the soundtrack is so short, but it doesn't feel that short in the series, because everything is done so well there. But I did like the music. I thought the tracks were good. Were they? I feel like they're kind of like B tier Sagisu stuff, like his Bleach stuff, where you're like, oh, this is cool, and there's good tracks, and I like it, but it's not like his top tier Eva stuff.
Right.
But I still think that was good.
That's a skill in itself, right? To be able to kind of blend in and not sound like yourself.
No, and it was real good. I liked the opening song, and then I really, really hated the first two movies. I hated them. I didn't want to. I love Berserk. Like, Berserk 97 is awesome. Like, I've read up through at least 36 or so in English and Japanese. It's probably my all-time favorite manga. And this adaptation, so watching the Memorial Edition, I went and looked at some comparisons between the original film versions, which I never saw, and I think I might have actually, like, gone and branded myself in the hopes that demons would have sacrificed and eaten me had I seen that original version. It's not good. And I actually found a little interview with the president of 4C that was like, hey, how do you feel about working with CG? And they're like, we use these parts and we wanted to have them with, the actual quote was, we use CG for parts where hand-drawn animation was the most difficult to use. We were planning to make all the faces, which are easy to look conspicuous, with hand drawing, and then combine them with CG. I am afraid there are some parts which we could have done better. As Studio 4C, we will continue to enthusiastically use CG as a tool to aid hand drawn animation, aiming to produce expressions which cannot be done with only either hand drawn or CG. So, you know, I'll give them a credit there that, you know, they at least acknowledge, like, yeah, some of this stuff could have been done better. And seeing the comparison, I'm like, oh my gosh, if this is the better version, just, I think in my head, I'm just kind of like, why? Like, why?
I mean, I do want to give them some credit. Like, I came into this trying to think of, like, I didn't want to be too negative, but I feel basically the exactly the same way. And I feel like if I'm going to put a positive spin on it, it's that they were experimenting with like drawing all that armor, because it seemed like it was basically just when there was a lot of armor that they went into the CG. And so a lot of hard stuff where like it has to keep its shape through motion, kind of like mechanical things, right, that they're like, oh, CG is good at this. But
yeah,
also large numbers of soldiers.
Yeah.
Like, the Battle of Dol Guray is a good example of there's probably hundreds of people there. And if you were to hand animate that, that scene alone would have bankrupted 4C probably.
Yeah, but...
So I understand the need for it. And I think the answer given from the president of 4C was very, I would say, you know, made for the press. It's to me, it's very clear that this is my interpretation of it. I would say that I lean towards agreeing with what Dylan said. I would say hate is a strong word for the first two. I think there's merit in the first two. I think the third is by far the strongest. Mm-hmm. So the third being about the last, I would say. I believe movie three opens up with the rescue of Griffith. So that's kind of where movie three begins. So from there on in the Memorial TV series, I feel like it was quite strong. In some parts, other parts, I would say maybe not. But
that fits because I don't think I saw movie three, because movies one and two that a friend showed me, just I could not stand them, because I did see that original face art, and I feel like also just the blending of characters and backgrounds in some places wasn't as good as it was in the Memorial Edition. Like any time it went to CG in battle, it was really obvious and had like just a game cutscene look. I think there might have been like frame rate differences between the character animation and the background that they re-rendered this time and added motion blur to the background to make it look better.
I mean, there are games Possibly. That look better than this movie, which is what I kept thinking of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's try to keep it in the context of when it was made. So the CGI was done in the early 2010s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, to keep it in that lens. Granted, even back then, there was CGI pre-rendered stuff that certainly still looked better, but obviously not without huge, huge expense. I don't know what the budgets were for these. I can't imagine that they were infinite.
Yeah.
No, but that affects it there. One of the things I think that's very interesting is the director for the movies is Toshiyuki Kubota, who is the... director or key animation director for, let's see here, what are the, a couple things that people might have heard of, storyboard animation director for Nadia, for, where is it? I mean, animation for the Ideon movies going back that far, key animator on Zamble,
So he's the oldest of G's. Like, he is OG
and
in the anime.
Oh, yes. You may have heard this one. He's the chief animation director for a series called Gunbuster. Don't know if anyone's familiar with that.
Never heard of it.
And, like, storyboard and animation director for the first two episodes of Giant Robo. So,
he can direct amazing animation.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like, he has done such incredible things.
So let's take that then. So we've talked about the CG being hideous, but what I would like to at least try to defend is the scenes that were then, you know, hand drawn, in my opinion, looked pretty stellar. Like one of the ones I immediately think of is the ballroom dancing scene. Mm-hmm. And I want to call it movie two. I don't remember what episode it was. It was after they won the Battle of Dol Guray, right? And that's the famous scene where Casca's in the ballroom dress, and she uses Guts as an excuse to get away from the creepy-ass nobles. But outside of, again, the nobles who were done in the pretty CG, like all of the band of the Hawk were hand-animated, and all the dancing and stuff looked pretty, I would say, OG 4C to me. I think that's one of the most impactful scenes in the entire series for me as far as just quality of the animation and the impact it made, and the kind of like the messaging that was sent. I thought it was like, wow, this definitely feels more impactful than the comparable scene in 97 that I recall. It's been a long time since 97, so there's going to be some, you know, fuzziness there.
So with 97, I was watching this, and before I even finished, I was like, have I lost my mind? Is Berserk 97, am I putting it up on a crazy pedestal? Was it like... So I have the Blu-ray, and I rewatched episode one, which I'm rereading the manga now, and it's like, I kind of like was weird about it first, but I really like it. They did a cool job at making an original story for the first episode of that, which consolidated like the first kind of two or three volumes of the manga down into one episode.
Where was the manga in its run at the point that 97 was made?
I don't know. I'd have to go back. But my point there was, like, I did go back and watch that episode, and, like, it looks traditionally like Berserk 97, where the backgrounds, the character drawings, and everything like that are so awesome, and you get some... The places where they put their effort in the character animation looks incredible, and then the places where they decide kind of not to, they do pans over very nicely drawn stills. And that's what they pretty much do throughout the series, because they had their budgetary limitations and skills and everything that they could do, and they're like, we can't draw like this as a full-on Battle of Doldre, so we'll do the parts we can, and for other parts we'll do a nice drawing pan and scan,
which I prefer to just kind of ham-fisted CG, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I would agree there.
I think the thing is, like, when I go and I look at some of, like, the... like, if you did, like, a little edited down, like, promo video from the Memorial Edition, because I saw a little short one they have together for some part of it, and, like, it looks awesome. Because there are, as Nick said, there definitely are parts that really do look awesome, and they're very well done, and I think it's cool. But it's like, you get that, and you're like, oh, okay, all right, cool, we finally got to this part, we're going to be good, and then 5 seconds later, oh, nope, I'm out again, because we dumped in some random junk OCG.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... It's interesting watching this. It seemed so much more jarring, the switch from scenes where it was very carefully hand-animated with CG elements.
Yeah.
To, like, for me, I would say one of the best applications outside of the Eclipse, I think we can talk about the Eclipse in its own segment, but of integrating, like, the, you know, traditional 2D hand animation with CGI was just after the Zod fight, when Guts is doing his, you know, the scene where he's swinging the sword, you know, on that like outdoor area, and Griffith comes out on his crutches, and, you know, got to swing his sword, and you see the swirling, you know, effect of his sword, you know, affecting the leaves around him, and they use CGI for that. I was like, you know what, that was pretty tasteful, because animating that would be basically impossible, but with CG, you know, integrating in, like, you can kind of see the impact of, like, this is still how strong the dude is swinging that sword with one arm. He's able to whirl up, you know, a whole bunch of leaves and slice them into ribbons.
I wouldn't say that.
You know, you disagree?
Yeah,
you
disagree? I think leaves are one of those things where, like...
Comparing it to the rest of the CG, mind you, is what...
Yeah, I mean, I will agree with you totally that it is, like, that is a fine use of CG, and I think that worked okay. I'm just saying, like, I think that's also probably one of the easier, I say as a person who doesn't do this, but like an easier thing for animators to do, because, you know, leaves don't have to have a consistent shape, you know, because they kind of flip around or whatever. Like, I don't know. But I agree, though. That was a good use of CG, I felt. Like, they can have that one.
All right. One topic I wanted to at least do a little bit of kind of expanding on was the choice of voice acting, because as far as I can tell, not a single person from 97 reprised in this, which doesn't surprise me a ton. I mean, it's a, you know, long separation, but I found that I was talking about this outside of podcast with Dylan. I found hilariously ironic was that Griffith originally 97 was famously done by Toshiyuki Morikawa, who is also the established canon voice of Sephiroth, But for the memorial movies, it was Takahiro Sakurai, who is the canon voice for Cloud in the FF series. And I thought, you know, I mean, for me, Morikawa will always be Griffith. I mean, just such an iconic voice attached to such an iconic villain. But I actually thought Sakurai's interpretation of the character was actually pretty impressive. I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah.
Considering historically, Cloud is a very unemotional character.
And he's kind of a pretty boy, too, so.
Yeah. But, you know, Griffith is definitely collected, but, you know, has a certain amount of like, you have to be able to portray the level of sociopathy well in order to, like, you know, really, right? Yeah. I mean, like, to make the that's why, like, Morikawa does such a great job with him. But I thought Sakurai did a pretty good job overall. I was pretty impressed with his interpretation of the character. I kind of wanted everybody else's input there, though.
Hmm. Yeah, I think everybody was pretty good. Like, it didn't even really cross my mind about them being different until I went to look it up and I was like, oh, none of them are the same. Okay, well, good job, guys.
I met them.
Yeah?
I met them. Yep. I think they were fine. Like, they weren't bad, but I feel like they were, I feel like the intensity and the explosiveness of the characters was lost a little, particularly in Casca. Like, I didn't.
Oh, Miyamoto Yuko is hard to replace.
I know she's hard to replace, but I felt like that really. And it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, I'm curious how I'll feel because it's been quite a while since I've, a long time since I've seen 97, a long time since I've read through all the manga, so maybe I'll have more of a softer feel for Casca. But she just felt so much softer in this than in 97, and I think some of it's from anyone who's not Miyamura Yuko doing a voice, you end up sounding soft.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like the voices, like the voices were fine. Like,
I wonder how much of your disappointment is maybe a closer connection to the TV series. Cause I haven't seen the TV series since like we watched it in club. So
same here. So yeah.
So I've basically forgotten.
It's quite, I totally agree. I could have some weird goggles on something there. I'm trying to acknowledge that as I say this, but like even just watching it, I was like, this doesn't sound like as Casca as it should. And I was like, oh, well, that's why, because it's not her, and it's not to me. She sounded off, and then Griffith, I felt like he lacked the ultimate in control evil voice that I was kind of expecting. So I was a little bit disappointed with the main trio. Like I said, nothing that's like bad, but I wasn't like oh hey, this is great. But I guess they did all the voices for, like, it seems like this is the same voice cast that did stuff in the 2016 show, that they were kind of recast there, and then it's pretty much the same voice cast from, oh, that's right, but this came out first.
Right.
This came out first, so that's 2016, right? Was kind of afterwards.
That's right, because this was 2012, studios, and so then this, yeah. And then back to this in 2022. They probably did some new voice cleanup stuff on some things, but...
So in that sense, I think a little bit more context is required, because, you know, the animation for this was done, you know, 12 years ago, and granted, there's been great animation, you know, from 12 years ago, from 50 years ago, there's some examples of great animation. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people's perception of these movies being more, I would say, positive is because following these is Berserk 2016, which is notoriously hideous looking and a very poor adaptation. I would say historically poor adaptation of any manga into anime.
Mm-hmm.
Probably most people's top three, I would say, as far as poor adaptations. So I think the context of going from this to then what you see in Berserk 2016 is such a huge drop off, and obviously different studio, different budget, you know, all of that. So, you know, and animating, trying to animate Berserk is probably just, you know, laden with challenges, mostly because of Miura's art and backgrounds and the amount of the density of kind of things happening in action sequences. Like, it's it poses lots of challenges. Like, he did not make Berserk with the intention of having it be turned into anime, is kind of, I feel like, at least that's how I interpret it. I mean, that's...
And aside, even from that, it's kind of like the... It's very similar in some ways to Junji Ito stuff, where it's kind of like a normal manga in some points, and then you get like, or like Blade of the Immortal stuff, where you get like all of a sudden these huge single shots and frames and holds on stuff in the manga that's so crazy and impactful and detailed and everything, and it's so hard to do that in anime, such that you almost have to kind of not do it, because you're just like, well, what am I, how am I going to do this? I can't just like hold on a frame for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm glad you brought up manga, Dylan, because something that I think you might be one of the only people qualified, because I actually haven't read much of Berserk manga at all. But one thing I noticed between Memorial Saga and the and 97 TV is kind of divergence in plot elements. So some key ones, because correct me if I'm wrong, because it has been 20 plus years since I've watched the Battle of Doldure in 97, and I haven't read it in manga, but wasn't the final blow on General Buscone in Berserk 97, wasn't it with using Zod's sword, because Gut's sword broke? Am I misremembering that?
I have vague memories of what you're saying there.
So I guess because I the whole scene of him beheading the horse and Buscone definitely happened in both, but I recall that he lost his sword, and then from the cliffside, Zod threw his, and he ended up using Zod's sword to do the final blow in 97.
Man, that sounds correct. That really sounds correct. I feel like I can put that together. And I honestly, I don't remember what it is in the manga.
Okay, because that was that, if what I'm remembering is true and not just a, you know, a Kazam thing, they made the decision to just have Guts handle it himself the whole time, and you know, that part does not, that's a relatively minor detail that I don't necessarily think is a big deal. The other thing that was, I would say, pretty prevalent in the Memorial series that was not, if I remember correctly, was not present at all in 97, was the presence of Skull Knight in any capacity. Skull Knight didn't appear in 97 at all, is that right?
Yeah,
that sounds correct to me.
That was a big complaint about 97, was there was no Skull Knight. I remember that very clearly from then.
And he's a major character in the history of the Berserk world, obviously. Well, not obviously, but to those people that are aware, he is a pretty major character.
And in the end, like, I didn't remember the complaints about Skull Knight until, like, I got all the way to the end of this thing, and, you know, because he shows up in the middle and it's like, well, that was kind of pointless. Like, of course they would leave him out of the TV series, right? But then it's like, oh, wait, Skull Knight is how he gets out of the eclipse. Like, so it's like, that's why everybody was so mad, because it's like, you left out this really important thing that explains how he survives this.
Yeah. The other, I would say, story element that I don't want to say was divergent, but they massively diminished in Memorial was Gambino, right?
Yeah.
Like, there were flashbacks, and then there was the one, I would say, exposition scene in, I can't remember which app, but when he was with Casca, and, you know, he has that traumatic PTSD episode, and that's when he talks about Gambino. But you don't ever really see Gambino, the character, at all in Memorial series, where in 97 he's not there a lot, but at the bare minimum he's a voiced character, and there are flashback scenes with him interacting with a young Guts.
And interestingly, that whole PTSD scene was added in Memorial Edition. that was like a 6-minute scene that was not in the original
correct
stuff.
Yeah, I think because that was actually, I think, a complaint they had about the original trilogy, Golden Age trilogy, was that the whole, and Gambino wasn't mentioned at all. Like, there was only, he was only inferred in those like two flashbacks that Guts had.
I think that was one of the things that I had with this, with these movies, particularly the first two. I think I give the apocalypse or the eclipse, I give that kind of the what's it, Revenge of the Sith, out of the trilogy version, where you're like, okay, like this at least feels like it's a thing that maybe was worth doing, that was pretty much just, they didn't really do much at the end of the 97, if I remember correct. It just kind of stops. Mm-hmm. So that part and the CG and the stuff in there is generally better. There's still some worse portions, but I think the thing for me is like, the first two movies, I'm just kind of like, I understand why, I understand budgets and things like that, and it's like, hey, what can we get money for? You can get money to do Golden Age, okay. But it just, they felt so both kind of long and rushed, such that you didn't feel like I got any sense of like any of the secondary characters, like really at all, a little bit of Judo. But like that was it basically, and so I think it took away some of the impact of the eclipse there.
Yeah,
at least that's my feeling.
I don't agree. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's still pretty clear that Judo, Pippin, Corcus, Casca, you know, and the rest of the, you know, those are the main named, right. Let's call them named Band of the Hawk characters, and then there's some. A few named like very distant ones. I think like Gaston, like Guts is kind of second, you know, second in command is about the other, only other named one I can
who
recall.
I hate how he sounds, you know, like are... just like Corcus. I keep confusing them in the show.
I agreed there, but I still feel like within the scope of the Memorial Edition, you still definitely get an idea that Griffith as the leader has left such a strong impression that any of those people could have gone and done their own thing, but they all believe in his vision. They all want to follow him. You know, they are the, you know, main, I would say, facilitators of success, right? And the band, like, that to me was made clear enough in Memorial Edition. And I think that it's, I think with regards to the eclipse, I think the impact between 97 and Memorial Edition, it's kind of, I don't think either does it perfectly, because I do agree, in Berserk 97 you get a lot, you get 25 episodes, right? You get that much more time with the other characters, so you can understand the, I would say, gravity of Griffith's decision to go forth with the feast. But then you don't really, they really obviously don't do much with the eclipse at all in 97, where in Memorial Edition, it's like a full 35-minute scene, so the brutality of it is really put on full display. And I think the eclipse is probably the one, like you said, kind of the shining example isn't maybe the right term, but I would say it's probably the where 4C probably put together CGI plus animation contiguously the best out of the rest of whatever they tried in the you know, previous two movies. I don't know. I'll let you guys debate on that.
I think at a certain point, the content of the show took over for me. Like, I stopped caring about the visual presentation just because the story was so good. I was engrossed. But the CG in the eclipse was also very bad.
Really? You think it was equally as bad as the rest? Well, I thought it was at least integrated
it
better.
Was, I'll give you that. It was better, but like, it, because it's like a lot of monsters and stuff, but...
exactly.
Yeah, I feel like that's more like luck and less of, you know, it was dark, so they could kind of hide stuff, and so yeah, I mean, it was better, for sure. I have a note here that yeah, the end part was all extremely, it was a lot better, but still not great. Wish it was more hand animated.
I mean, yeah, I think we all wish for that, but that's definitely not happening. Like, what about you, Mike? Like, what was your interpretation of the eclipse in the Memorial Edition specifically?
Well, I didn't remember it from the 97 at all. So actually, I'm trying to remember if I ever saw the end of 97 or not, or did it just end not that dramatically?
You got about... You saw the other four angels, and that's more, and then a little bit of the, and then the birth of Femto, and everything else was almost like a fever dream, like it was done in almost like a montage sort of way. Am I right there, Dylan? Am I describing it aptly for 97?
I do not recall.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what my memory of it.
Your memory appears to be much better than mine, so I'll go with yours.
So apparently 97 covered the eclipse in a not terribly memorable manner, which is certainly different from this movie.
The impact, for sure. That's kind of what I've been saying. So, yeah, I mean, so I guess the question is, you know, was it better for it to be in that detail? I would argue yes, only because it is more in line with the themes that Muta has set in Berserk manga. So I would say thematically it more aligns. Obviously, Berserk 97, they couldn't dial it up too harshly because, you know, it was still a TV series that had to air on television in the 90s. So, yeah. You know, I can get away with that. One thing I proposed doing this podcast episode, and I said, you know, well, let me spot check Memorial Edition to see if it's, you know, censored at all. And, you know, all I had to do was go to the eclipse scenes and go through. I'm like, oh, most definitely not censored. No censoring there, folks. None whatsoever. Yeah. So when if you guys recall, I think it was maybe a podcast episode we did 2 years ago now where we talked about, you know, most embarrassing, like, you know, watching of something in public. That scene was what I was watching on a plane, and I was like, oh, I gotta fast forward some of this.
Yeah.
And then I fast forwarded about 2/3 of it. I was like, Jesus Christ, they really made this part long. Yeah. I was
This really turned into, as we used to say, that sort of anime.
Yeah.
So that's a thing I do want to talk about, and is okay. Like, how would you, what type or what level or would you recommend this to? Because this series is, you know, very graphic, and I would say it's definitely not a TV series. It definitely not TV. Like, even the stuff they have in there would even be too much for late night HBO, because it's so graphic and there's so much.
There's everything in there but drug use, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to be reductive, but with regards to anime people, I don't know. I would have to know somebody very well to recommend this specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for other people in general, not to be reductive, but I would say if you were able to watch Game of Thrones, you're probably thematically going to be able to digest more of this than not.
Yeah. It's probably true.
Yeah, I hear where you're coming at there, but it's also just like there's a lot of just very visceral, tantalizing sex stuff that I think to me feels in a way more so than, and I haven't watched all of it, but then more so in like most of the Game of Thrones stuff, where in the Game of Thrones it's like, oh, there'll be some naked people in the background moving around, but not the...
I mean, I haven't watched much of it, but what little of Game of Thrones I have seen, there's definitely plenty of SA scenes in that series as well. So,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't necessarily involve the grotesque themes that you see in Berserk, but I would say from that context, it's not overly different. I would say the level of detail is probably a bit more in Berserk because it's animated, so you're not expecting an actress to go do some pretty challenging, you know, scenes. But I'm trying to keep this. I mean, it's funny because we're a podcast that tries to be, you know, be expletive free, but we're talking about a series, a thing that is incredibly graphic. So yeah. Discussing it is, you know, in a form like this is challenging. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, given the standard Japanese censorship, it's honestly roughly as graphic as hentai from the little of it that I've watched.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
easily, probably.
I think it is. In some level, I'm like, I wonder how that actually either broadcast or not, or released like in Japan, and like what level of censoring was applied to it.
Yeah, actually, I wonder where it was aired.
Yeah, like how, because Japanese, like how many black bars were put over stuff.
And if you, Tokyo MX, Tochigi TV, Gunma TV, I mean, aired on a number of networks.
Those are like local, like those are over the air broadcast. So they must have had some censorship. I mean, Tokyo MX, I guess that's also over the air, right?
I don't know.
I believe so. Yeah, I don't see anything about level of censorship or not. All I see is the air date, which is, it aired at 12:30 in the morning. So the slot definitely tracks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know if Japanese censorship laws can kind of be bypassed, because I mean, I don't know, like for the crunchy stream, there was that huge block of like, hey, yeah, if this sort of stuff offends you, do not watch this. Yeah. Like the giant wall of text there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't watch it at first because I had to like go adjust my settings, because I for some reason it wouldn't let me watch it. I didn't realize.
Didn't have the.
Yeah, same. Like, I didn't realize my Crunchyroll was set not to allow 18 plus. Yeah. Because
didn't know there was any 18 plus.
So I'm trying to think of that versus, like, you know, like versus the option to make it such that you could still have plenty of violence and things there, but have it be less graphic and tantalizing, like the scene with Griffith and Charlotte.
I totally forgot about that scene. Yeah. I was thinking, I mean, the final scene, well, the eclipse is just so absolutely brutal that it, for me, it supersedes everything yeah. else inside of the rest of it.
So. But there's so much of the other stuff there that's, I kind of like that. Does putting that in there improve it more than it restricts the audience?
That's a great question. I think that's purely up to taste, because I mean, I would say that it's probably on par with what Miura intended for in the manga, but in manga it's a few panels, right? It's not right. Like you're not expecting actors to be like, so this is what's happening to you and I need you to be able to, you know, portrayed as such, like you're being violated by a newly formed demon king. I'm like,
yeah. The Charlotte stuff in particular did go on, I think, way too long. Like I was like, I feel like I want to skip forward here, but I mean, I didn't. But it's like this one is a bit much.
It was on the order of minutes long,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Was a lot.
Yeah,
it was uncomfortably long for me.
Yeah, for some reason the stuff with Casca was also bad, but it was kind of interspersed with a lot of action, so I don't know, I wasn't as bothered by that one.
Oh, like Guts like dismembering himself.
Yeah,
that I will say the animation of him freeing himself from the jaws of that beast, like dang, that level of gore detail hasn't been seen since the 90s, yeah. If I may say so myself.
Yeah.
So the sinew and stuff, I was like, dang, somebody really did their homework for that scene.
Yeah,
That was pretty accurate there from a physiological standpoint.
It's graphic. So.
Yeah, very. But yeah, back to the question from Dylan. For me personally, I think it made me uncomfortable enough that if I had to put on a percentage, for me it probably felt like it went to like 125% overall for those scenes. And, you know, they could have dialed it back a little bit and kept, for me, it would have still had the same impact without being like looking at my watch and be like, is this over yet? And I have to look over my shoulder and be like, is my wife around? Because I'm pretty sure this will trigger her if she sees me watching this. So, you know, that's kind of my thing. I think it was fine to leave the content more, you know, source accurate, but the amount of time I think could have been dialed down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is my take.
And then they could have used that time to build up some of the other characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely for me one of the main limitations and downsides of the Moon World Edition is just you just get so much less screen time. Like Pippin is probably got like what 7 minutes of total screen time, if that.
I mean, to be fair, on the original TV, he doesn't do much either, right?
He wasn't super prevalent in the original TV either, if I recall. Yeah, like Judo, you know, Judo obviously is one of the more important, as is as Rickert as well. And what's cool about Rickert is we get to see what his role was post Eclipse, which I'm pretty sure we didn't see in 97. So that part I did enjoy, and seeing that little bit extra past the actual Eclipse with Skull Knight and all of that, and you know what happens to Casca afterwards, kind of, you know, leads into the way I interpret it is like, use Golden Age Memorial Edition as a jumping off point to actually go into the manga.
That's certainly what it made me want to do.
I mean, I've been hoping since I read it, the arc that follows the Apocalypse is the I think they call it the Lost Children arc, and it's one that I've been just like, it is so good and so berserk that I've just like, ever since I read it, I was like, man, the first thing I do if I ever get real rich is I'm gonna hire people to do this arc, like make an anime of this. Which no, is
you better get like FU rich to be able to animate it correctly.
Yeah, need some Zuckerbucks. But yeah, it's one of those things where I'm just kind of like, why did you guys do this part again? Like, you could have, I don't know. I'm sure it's all in funding and those things there, but the first two movies were, I was just so angry. I got angry like guts at them. Mm-hmm. Another thing that got me was, I think it's before like episode 3 or something, there's like this pre-episode like fast-paced kind of like super spoiler section.
Oh yeah, I remember what you're talking about.
And it like shows like the whole kind of like everything there, and like with a whole bunch of extra stuff they didn't actually end up putting in the rest of it, and some later stuff like in the manga and things there, and like all this other stuff. And I'm like, well, you're trying to sell me on this story of being involved in this and knowing like, okay, maybe something bad's gonna happen or whatever, but then it's like, oh, by the way, hey, here's the trailer that shows you the whole plot of the movie, now watch the movie. And you're like, what?
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I agree. I thought that was really weirdly inserted. Yeah. Just that like, was, if I recall, that was inserted into Memorial Edition. I don't recall that being in the original movie cuts.
I think that was added as well, yeah.
Which is a weird thing to do.
Yeah, that was weird, like,
in my opinion.
I was just like, why do that? Why hurt us like that? And there was another. Oh, and then also, I think, and I honestly, I don't remember the manga as well, but my feeling was when Griffiths gets put in prison, that at least in 97, my recollection, could be wrong, is that you don't see Griffiths in there really until the Band of the Hawk gets there, and then they see his state. Now I don't remember. I could be off, and there could be some more stuff in the manga where you see it, or you see it a little bit. But it just felt like it was kind of like there was this big time jump forward with stuff, which you got to do at some point. But it just kind of, it felt like, oh, it was less impactful when the Band of the Hawk showed up to rescue him that you already knew, and then they're kind of like, oh, okay, well, this ain't good. I don't know.
I mean, I mean, Griffith was still like a functional person. Like he was, you know, he was getting the crap kicked out of him by the torturer, but or actually by the king at that point. But he was still lucid enough to kind of like put two and two together on, you know, why, you know, basically make that underhanded accusation of like, oh, is that why Charlotte is still not betrothed?
Yeah. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like later when he's just down to nothing.
You're saying like when it's, that's the opening to movie 3 where you see him kind of wake up from consciousness and kind of have that like that fever dream, basically, or that of the creature emerging out of the wall. Is that what you're talking about? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Mm. And so it kind of, like, I felt like it decreased the...
I get what you're saying. I do agree.
The sense of foreboding and stuff there. I'm trying to recall, and I'll continue to do my Berserk manga research and continue to have updates
that scene,
here. But...
I think they could have executed that scene without showing so much of him. Like, they could have kept a really tight camera on, like, just say, like, his eyes.
Or helmet, you know, or something.
And, and just, not even the helmet, because I feel like the helmet is one of those giveaways, too. So just really zoom in on his eyes and just, like, him, what he sees, and just keep the rest of him completely off shot, I felt like would have been fine. But, I feel like from then on, though, at least the rest of movie three, I don't know, I felt like it. It felt like a payoff for kind of being able to get through parts one and two.
It's your reward.
I don't know how everybody else feels, but I thought it was paced pretty well after that, as far as from liberation of Griffith to the eclipse, because that's where that part in T97 is where my memory gets really fuzzy, because I don't remember how much was allocated to all of that.
Yeah, I agree.
In 97, so I know I have to go back. At some point, I have to pick up that Blu-ray set anyway, so I'll probably go back and revisit it, because I'm 100% certain I can watch 97 around my wife and not feel nearly as self-conscious. So.
Right, exactly. That's the thing of 97 being an actual, like, TV series. It's like, you could put it on, and she might be like, what are you watching? This thing is really... like violent or whatever, but she'd be like, okay, that's fine. It's nothing that you would put on and be like, oh boy, I gotta look behind my back before I press play on this.
Yeah.
Okay, so we still have a little bit less than 10 minutes, so, and you know, I would say we've all kind of given our more or less our take on it. So the real question is, I have for everybody here is, did they really need to retell the Golden Age arc again in this format versus, maybe have a little bit of overlap, but then go actually past what any other, you know, animated Berserk at that time had done so far? Like, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
No, if they had... if it was able to live up to expectations, like if it had kept the quality of the best of the films throughout the whole thing, like none of the CGBS, like it would have been worth retelling the Golden Age arc. I think it would have been really amazing, but since it's kind of mediocre, it's like, I wish they kind of did it would be cool to see more, but then they did the TV series too, which kind of did that and did it poorly. So, like, I don't know, maybe better that they save the later stuff for a better attempt.
What about you, Dylan?
You know, it's one of those things where, like, I'm a big Berserk fan, have been for a long time, and, like, I didn't watch the movies when they first came out, you know, whatever pile of reasons, so I watched these here, and I wish they hadn't ever made any of this. I wish they hadn't done any Berserk animation after 97, and they had just taken that, done a nice release, got it up on the streaming services, and then who knows, maybe that would have gotten some different funding. So no, I wish they hadn't made it. Because even the parts that were good, like the, like, you know, I agree with you, I think the Eclipse was done well in that it did have still some of the same CG problems, but because of the content and the way they were showing stuff there, that kind of masked it and made it look a lot better. You know, just like, you know, fog and, you know, Silent Hill 2 or whatever, making things look better because it kind of obscures some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, I was looking at it and I'm like, okay, oh, it's cool seeing this like animated in color, but I'm like, nothing that I saw there wasn't anything that I didn't have in my head from reading the manga. So I wish they hadn't made it, which makes me sad. I don't want to feel that way.
Sure.
Because everyone should be able to get all the Berserk they want. And it makes me sad to feel like I wish they hadn't done it.
Hey, manga still exists and is still living on, so it's always there.
Yep.
And always will be there. What about you, Mike?
As probably the least connected to the series of all of us, which seems to happen sometimes, I enjoyed this. I probably would enjoy 97 more, but it's been so long since I've watched it, and this did give me a kick to read the manga sooner than I probably would have gotten around to it otherwise, because it reminds me that there's really cool stuff in this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I definitely fall somewhere towards, probably like somewhere towards Sam and Mike, maybe lean towards Mike. Like, I respect Berserk a ton. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I definitely, especially now, understand just what a seinen masterpiece of a property this really is. To have this longevity is, you know, pretty unheard of for, you know, this genre, this subgenre. I would say that I too am disappointed that the final product is still not really quite up to what, you know, whatever arbitrary expectations that I have for Berserk in the animated medium. But I'm still glad that I watched it again, because I watched the original trilogy like 3-4 years ago, and now I watched, you know, the Memorial Edition, and even with its flaws, I'm still glad that I watched it. I'll probably now want to go back to see 97 again, because I want to really get a high fidelity side-by-side comparison on, you know, is 97 really just unilaterally better, or is there value between the two that, you know, one can offer a different, like, valuable experience over the other. But for me, I probably would have wished that they started toward maybe like at the Battle of Doldre as kind of the opening, and then went further into the actual post apocalypse stuff, because I think for the CGI, the dark world and the monsters and the creatures would work much better in CGI than an army of people.
Yeah.
So I think 4C could have done it a bit better, but now we probably will never know.
I will say it is kind of tough though, because after the eclipse, it starts like a whole new arc. So I don't know how easy it is to cut off a slice.
Yeah, but it's still something I would have liked to have seen, because, you know, if we take in with the lens of back in 2012-13 when these were being made, you know, the Berserk 2016 still didn't exist
yet.
So, you know, at that point, there still hasn't been, in that point, really any meaningful new,
true,
like, plot content for Berserk made. And then, of course, 2016 came with a massive plop. Yeah. So, is what I can say.
Big sploosh.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a little bit runnier than Sploosh. But Dylan, actually noticed you subjected yourself to a bit of that. I saw that on the Discord. So what are your thoughts on 2016?
Oh, it was gross. It was terrible.
And then, yeah, Dylan, I think you said you watched a few minutes of it.
Yeah, because I had a couple minutes. I'm like, okay, what is this? And then I put it on, and I was like, this is not what I was expecting. It looks like weird designs that look like a bad version of Trigun Stampede.
I'm much, much worse, in my opinion.
Hey, man, Trigun Stampede is actually pretty good. IMO.
And I read a little thing on Berserk 2016, and I guess basically the studio that did it had never really done like a full on like CG series, and they're like, no, we're totally just gonna do this and it's gonna be cool. And they did it, and it's not cool.
You know, one thing I found when I was looking around at various interviews and things is that Murata supervised that TV series. So I don't know.
So weird.
I don't know. He's just like, whatever, man.
Maybe he's just respectful of the medium and be like, you know, I already know it's impossible to animate this, so good luck, guys. Just do your best. Maybe he was just super supportive, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Another thing I noticed while I was going through various info is that the box office returns dropped like a rock for the last movie. I didn't get what the second one had, but like the first one got 1.3 million and then the last one got 0.4 million. And it's like, that's like the best one. So like, I feel like it's almost like people were so soured by the first stuff being so bad that they didn't go see the last one.
That it's happens.
Almost like an inverse matrix effect.
Yeah. Why?
Star Wars prequels.
Yeah.
Where the first one was, everyone was like super hyped on it and went and saw it, and they're like afterwards, they're like, oh man, that was a film. Okay, all right. Was it all right? I don't know. It was fine. It was okay. And then they saw the second one, they're like, that wasn't great. And then fewer people went and saw a third one, which was actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Well, with that belated sigh, maybe we should call it quits before we traumatize poor Dylan.
I do have further. One piece of errata.
Oh, please do.
From talking about Pat Labour 2 when I was talking about the Wizardry references, Sean O'Mara of Zimmerit.moe actually found an interview for the new Wizardry Daphne mobile game with Robert Woodhead and Mamoru Oshii, who apparently had not met until that interview, and Oshii did not know that Robert Woodhead was a fan of anime and his own work until that interview. But he had dropped Wizardry references into various of his movies, most heavily Avalon, but also the Pat Labour 2 ones that I missed. So, yeah, Oshii has apparently been a huge Wizardry fan since the beginning, or at least since the Apple II days.
That's so adorable. It's like the anime dual one-sided love trope in real life. Like they were both distant admirers of each other and didn't know it until quite recently.
Sorry, not Apple II. Japanese would have been PC-98. So like Oshii literally bought a PC-90 or a Mac so he could play Wizardry, something like that.
Oh, wow.
And you know, tried to sell it off as a work machine for the wife approval factor.
No one else has ever done that.
Yeah.
Something like
no,
that.
He was, never,
yeah.
Nope.
He was an innovator though. We didn't know to do that at the time. He was innovating.
Yeah, pioneer.
Pioneer.
Okay. Before I wrap up, anybody have any final closing statements they want to throw out before we shut this chapter on Berserk?
Soundtracks are good. They're up on Apple Music. You can go listen to them if you want some fun background music.
There you go. Anybody else? Going once, twice. All right. So we do have a topic selected for next episode. A recap up until now of all things recent in the anime sphere is kind of going to be what it is. So it's going to encompass probably 2.5-3 seasons worth of stuff, would you guys say?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll get back to talking about recent-ish things and our takes on them. So, yeah, you guys get to look forward to that. But yeah, until then, this is Amo Kenzaku signing off. Saraba.
Watch out for your balls! Ching, ching! Ching,
ching! Hey, watch that, alright?